Welcome to Money Sense, where we go beyond the numbers to help Canadians design a wealthier life. With host Brent Laux and trusted experts Kevin Hagedis and Andrew Roddick, partners at PWM Private Wealth Council and portfolio managers with Q Wealth. Whether you're preparing for retirement, designing tax-efficient income, or planning for future generations, financial decisions can be overwhelming. With a spotlight on pension-style investing strategies that prioritize long-term stability, Kevin, Andrew, and the PWM team will share their insights and perspectives to help you protect what you've worked a lifetime to build. Because effective financial planning should feel like laying a strong foundation. This is Money Sense.
I've got two guests back with us on this week's Money Sense program. It's our second in this series, dealing with macro investing and global economic patterns. Money Sense begins after this break. Welcome to our weekly Money Sense program. I'm your host, Brent Laux, and today we're continuing with part two of our two-part series featuring our special guest, Andy Constand. Andy is the founder, CEO, and CIO of Damped Spring Advisors. And we're joined again by Kevin Hagedis, founder of PWM Private Wealth Council and portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners. Gentlemen, happy to see your faces once again. Welcome back to our Money Sense program.
Thanks for having us.
Pleased that we're able to get Andy on for another episode. He was with us last week. It just flew by, and it seems like we really just scratched the surface. Kevin, last week you talked a bit about a special fund that you and Andrew Roddick co-manage for Q Wealth. Can you touch on that briefly for us?
Absolutely, Brent. You know, we manage a private pool called the Strategic Assets Fund, and so it's co-managed by me and Andrew and through Q Wealth Partners. And it's made up of non-correlated assets. And what that means is it's assets that if the stock market and bond market goes down, these assets tend to hold up better, they're less effective. And in many cases, they can even have a positive return in a down market. And you know, Brent, that's exactly what we saw about a month and a half ago when the S&P 500 was down 16.3%. Our fund was actually positive, and it's actually has a very, very nice return year to date. And the fund holds some pretty unique assets. So it holds things like music royalties and self-storage units, infrastructure investments. So investing in things like cell phone towers, fiber optic networks, cargo terminals, power metering, and even EV stations. And, you know, in fact, Northland Capital Partners, which is the firm that we access some of our infrastructure investments through, their largest customer or client is the Canada Pension Plan. So we're investing in exactly the same investments right along CPP, which has never been available to our clients in the past. We also have commodities in the portfolio, so things like gold and silver. And later this year, we're actually considering adding a farmland and ag land fund to the pool as well. You know, one of the sleeves in the fund is managed by Andy Constand. Q Wealth is an exclusive arrangement with Andy. So if you wanted to invest with Andy in Canada, you have to do it through a partner at Q Wealth, like PWM. And again, and I mentioned this on last week's show, I can't stress strongly enough how fortunate PWM and our clients are to have access to Andy's strategies. They work so well this year in our fund. It's one of the reasons why our fund is having such good returns year to date as well.
Andy, there's growing concerns about U.S. treasuries and government paper altogether. Is this a valid concern? And are we looking at the end of U.S. exceptionalism, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think let's unpack that a little bit. Is the U.S. going to default on its obligations? No. The reason is the U.S. can print its own currency, and it has no obligations in foreign currency. So this is not a problem for, certainly not an immediate problem, and not a problem for getting your money back. The problem lies in what your money is going to buy when you get it back and what you experience in terms of your risk while you wait to get your money back. And that's a different question. And I think it's quite clear that with $36 trillion of debt, with a deficit that is not in the near term, despite the attempts by the Trump administration to reduce the deficit, there is a question about what price one should accept U.S. assets, and in particular, government bond assets. Currently, the government bond market has been in a very narrow range, with 10-year yields ranging from a little bit below 4 to once short for a short period of time, a little bit above 5. But by and large, I think it's at 4.5 right now. It's right in the middle, doing fine. Our debt is clearing the market. We're able to, but, and this is the important but, When you look at the last 3 years, while the Fed has been fighting inflation, tightening monetary conditions, raising interest rates, if a dollar of consumption now costs $1.20, there's been a significant hit to one's purchasing power.
Yep.
They call that inflation, but you know, it helps to not think about the day-to-day changes in inflation, the month-to-month changes, but the accumulated inflation. And so a U.S. investor owning U.S. assets has seen their purchasing power reduced. Also, their value of all currencies that are not surplus nation currencies were the U.S. is the largest trade deficit related country. Other countries have seen their currencies depreciate significantly versus real hard money like gold, silver to some extent, crypto to some extent, Bitcoin, for instance, and for real hard assets. And that is where the pressure of the large deficits and large national debt is being felt. It's a policy choice, and the policymakers have done what they can to keep interest rates relatively stable, but at the expense of your purchasing power and your relative performance versus hard money. And I think that's a choice, and it's a choice that they can keep going for a long, long period of time, keeping interest rates suppressed at the expense of currency, or they can allow interest rates to rise to a level that they clear the market without any intervention. Now, is that 10%? No. Is that 6%? Possibly. And so when you think about the U.S. bond market at 4.5% on 10s, if you're a foreign investor, you're likely to lose money by either interest rates rising or along the way before you get your money back, or the currency weakening relative to gold. And that's not a very attractive thing. And this is the important part. The world is awash in U.S. assets. 70% of the market cap of the global equity market, what we all own, what everybody on earth owns in equities, is U.S. dollar companies. And that's 15 or 20% higher than it's ever been in any period of time for any country. So everybody owns U.S. stocks. So for them to retain that relative performance, 70 cents of every dollar and global dollar saved has to reinvest in U.S. equities. And I think that's too much to ask. So I would expect some underperformance of U.S. assets versus the rest of the world's assets to be a major trend for the next couple of years.
Interesting insight. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Money Sense. Welcome back on our Money Sense program. Very interesting conversation. This is our second show with our special guest joining us. We're talking about Andy Constan. Andy is the CEO and CIO at Damp Spring Advisors. Right now, though, we want to take a look at what's going on in the world. To say things are a little unsettled these days. Middle East tensions, the war with Ukraine, uncertainty for so many people these days. So how do you deal with that when you're trying to figure out an investing plan with all this geopolitical risk that's going on?
Right. I think that takes planning and preparation, and then sticking with your plan and preparation and trying to avoid getting drawn into what is an ever-changing and rapidly changing world and making bad decisions along the way. And so what I do is I accept that I have humility in accepting that I am not a geopolitical expert on what's going to happen in any global conflict. And so I tend to diversify my bets. I always own, not in my fund that we're talking about, but in my personal life, I always own a diversified portfolio of assets that's designed for all outcomes I can think of and that have occurred in history. And then tactically in my fund, I make sure I manage risk and I don't bet on outcomes in such size that it can cause me great stress, and try to breathe when it comes to what's crossing the tape, what's happening in the world and step back and think through the outcomes before I act.
It makes a lot of sense and great advice. You know, as portfolio managers, we're always facing assets dropping in value for one reason or another, right, Andy? And I guess my question to you is, how do you manage, I guess, downside risk in your portfolio versus looking at opportunities?
Right. So the drawdowns are the, in my experience over 40 years of investing, are the most difficult things to stomach. And so, because when you're in a drawdown, your life literally may change in terms of your expectations for your future, for the ability to afford the things that you planned on affording, like your kid's college or whatever it might be. And so avoiding drawdowns, to me, I would say I overweight that versus most people. And I think I give up a little bit of positive return for that, but that's the point. You need to know yourself and know what you can stomach through good planning. Often that requires outside people that you have to respect to understand who you are and what your experiences are like. So that's the know yourself portion of being prepared for a drawdown. Tactically, in my fund, I'm unwilling to take a drawdown beyond certain amounts. And so I happen to use a relatively simple options strategy in which if every single trade I have goes to its worst possible mechanical, like structured outcome all at once, I can't possibly lose more than 10%. So now that's a drawdown of 10% is a lot, don't get me wrong. But it's not 25 or 30% like we have seen or larger that we have seen in certain crises. So structurally, I plan for a drawdown that and I size it based on what I am willing to tolerate and structure it in ways that make sure I don't have a worse outcome.
Andy, we still got a few minutes in our program. Let me put this to you. Kevin often talks about the 60-40 traditional portfolio. And is that enough to give us the diversification that you speak of when we think of 60% stocks and 40% bonds?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked at Bridgewater. I worked with the CIOs on the all-weather product, which doesn't really look like that. What we found is that the 60-40 portfolio is a little growthy, meaning it isn't 60-40. It's really from a risk standpoint, because stocks, the 60, are riskier than the bonds, the 40. It really acts like an 80-20 or a 70-30 portfolio. And that portfolio, stocks do better than bonds when growth is strong. So I would say the first answer is that stocks tend to have a higher return and a higher risk, but they are also pro-growth assets, and it has to be growth, not just growth. The world grows over time. It has to be higher growth than expectations. So even if the world is fairly optimistic about growth, owning equities doesn't necessarily outperform because everyone's already optimistic about owning growth. So I think it's unbalanced toward growth. It's also, and so a negative growth experience is bad. But also, the 40 is, and to a lesser extent, the 60 is overly exposed to inflation outcomes or outcomes in which the financial system is tightening, meaning a deleveraging is occurring. And so there are other assets that are good to own for those outcomes. And my portfolio has 10% gold, for instance. You know, gold, Swiss franc, Japanese yen, a bunch of surplus nation currencies and their assets are all, and certainly to some, the young ones, and some of the old ones, digital gold like Bitcoin, are diversifiers for significant monetary decline or devaluation is the wrong word. But and so that, I think, belongs in everyone's portfolio, as well as commodities in general, which are exposed to pure growth, are a diversifier versus equities. So that's how I add up my portfolio. Lastly, diversify across currency and diversify across countries. So don't have all your eggs in any basket. No, like right, we just said, most people have many of their eggs in the US dollar asset basket. And I think that's too much.
Appreciate your insight, Andy. As we come towards the end of our second Money Sense program with our special guest, Andy Constant, Kevin Hegedus, final words for you.
Yeah, you know, as always, I want to thank Andy for being on the show. If you want to find out more about Andy's strategy, if you want to find out more about the Strategic Assets Fund, the PWM Fund, managed through QWealth, give us a call, 975-9500. Better yet, go to our website, pwmprivatewealth.com, book a complimentary meeting. We'd be happy to speak with you.
Thanks for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you.
This is Money Sense.
Thank you for joining us for Money Sense, where we explore meaningful conversations about money, life, and the choices that shape them both. At PWM Private Wealth Council, they're here to help you build a life as solid as the financial plan they've built for you. And most importantly, give you the confidence to know you're going to be okay. Financial planning services are offered through PWM Private Wealth Council. Portfolio management services are provided by QWealth, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. PWM Private Wealth Council is an owner and partner in the QWealth Partnership, where money meets meaning.